This was not an enjoyable message to prepare. It was very difficult. The reason being is I'm guilty. It will not be an enjoyable message to hear. I'll be preaching upon a particular sin, a sin of which we are all guilty. We can preach upon some sins that may not really be relevant to everyone here, but the sin of which we speak is relevant to each one of us. It is a sin that we have probably all committed this past week, one that many probably committed this morning. Some may have committed on the way here. Some may have committed since being here. The sin of which we speak is not only a sin that is inbred in our culture, but it is sadly a very, very common and inbred sin amongst God's people. There are sins that you and I do not dare to indulge in, but this isn't one of them. We indulge in this sin and we don't give it much thought. It is a sin so common that many are not even aware when they are committing it. And many do not even think of it as sin. It's often overlooked, certainly given a free pass. Again, I speak to myself more than anyone else. Though usually not thought of in this way, it is a sin like all sin. It's a great wickedness. It's degeneracy, it's corruption. It is satanic. It is seditious. It is provocative. It is inflammatory. It is a sin that sounds like music to Satan. It is a sin that has the power to tear apart at the roots and to destroy and to ruin churches, families, marriages, nations, the workplace, on and on we could go. It is a sin that in the Bible unleashed a plague that killed thousands. It is a sin that will rot our hearts and destroy our spiritual lives, creating an impairment to spiritual life. It is a sin that brings discouragement. It is a sin that sows discord and division. It is a sin that promotes disloyalty and brings the loss of enthusiasm and zeal in the Lord's service. Again, it is a sin that is very prevalent, permeating, and very extensive amongst God's people. In Exodus chapter 15, verse 24, "And the people murmured against Moses, saying, What shall we drink?" Chapter 16, verses 1 and 2. "And they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Verse 7, and in the morning when you shall see the glory of the Lord, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord. And what are we that ye murmur against us? And Moses said, this shall be when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat and the morning bread to the full, for that the Lord heareth your murmurings, which ye murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. And Moses spake unto Aaron, saying, all the congregation of the children of Israel come near before the Lord, for he hath heard your murmurings. Verse 12, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. In the book of Numbers, chapter 11, book of Numbers, chapter 11, and verse 1. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, and the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. So as you can see, the sin that we're speaking of is the sin of murmuring, the sin of complaining. Many times as we read Exodus 15, Exodus 16, those verses that we read, many times God's people are stunned when they read that account of Israel in Exodus, and they ask themselves, how could they be so forgetful and so ungrateful, failing to realize that's us. That's us. Failing to realize that this is a sin that is common amongst God's people. It's an epidemic. It's a way of life. You don't have, whether you could work in customer service, wherever, if you deal with people, people complain. People murmur. In 1 Corinthians 10, verses 1 through 10, we'll not turn there, but Paul gives a summary of Israel's sinful history, makes application to ourselves. And in the summary, he mentions five specific sins. He said in verse 5 that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. Lust. Verse 7, neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them. Idolatry. In verse 8, neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed. Lust. Idolatry. Fornication. Neither let us tempt Christ, provoking Christ, as some of them also tempted. So we have lust, we have idolatry, we have fornication, we have provocation. And then in verse 10, the last one he mentions, neither murmur. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured. So in this review of Israel's sinful history, listed with the sins of lust and idolatry and fornication and provoking God, listed with those sins is the sin of murmuring. What that does is it puts murmuring in its proper context. We do not treat it with that degree of seriousness, but that's the context of murmuring. Notice in Psalm 106, the psalmist is summarizing Israel's history. In verse 24, yea, they despised the pleasant land, that's Canaan. They thought lightly of it. They believed not his word. There's two problems there. They thought lightly of the promise of God. and they believed not, but murmured in their tents. They hearkened not unto the voice of the Lord. Murmurs usually don't. Therefore he lifted up his hand against them to overthrow them in the wilderness. He's talking about the murmuring. That's when he overthrew them. To overthrow their seed also among the nations and to scatter them in the lands. So in our text, back in Exodus and beyond, we see that it was a sin that destroyed their potential. It was a sin that destroyed their joy, their peace, their power, and their fellowship. So we're going to speak this morning on the sin of murmuring. And in doing so, we must view it in its proper light. So that brings us to our first point, the setting or the scene of Israel's murmuring. Israel had been in Egyptian bondage for 430 years. Generation after generation had longed and prayed for deliverance, for freedom from the taskmasters of Pharaoh. For generations, parents had told their children, one day God is going to visit His people and He's going to deliver us from this terrible bondage. And there were generations reared on that promise. Children growing up believing that one day God is going to visit us. God is going to be merciful and God is going to deliver us by His great power. There were people who grew up on that promise who died, never saw the promise of God fulfilled. But this generation that we read of in our text, this generation of Israelites had witnessed and experienced the very hand of God. They witnessed and they experienced God's deliverance. They witnessed and experienced the promise of the Lord. We read in Exodus 1, verses 11 and verses 13 and 14, we read something of the terribleness of their slavery. In Exodus chapter 2, verses 23 through 25, God raised up a deliverer in Moses. In Exodus 3 and verse 8, God declares His purpose of deliverance. The Egyptians had oppressed the Hebrews. And God would send a succession of terrible, terrible judgments upon Pharaoh and upon the land known as, of course, as the 10 plagues. These plagues, the Hebrews were miraculously spared. And they're recorded, leading to the 10th and final plague in Exodus chapter 12, the death of the firstborn of man and beast at midnight. The Israelites were instructed that each household was to take a lamb, sacrifice it, apply the blood upon the doorpost of the house. And at midnight when the death angel passed through the land and saw the blood applied, it would pass over that house, sparing the firstborn. But every firstborn in the land of Egypt died. You can't imagine the wailing that went on that night. But these Israelites that we read of in our text personally witnessed and experienced the wonderful sparing mercy of God. They saw it. And in Exodus 14, Moses miraculously brings Israel to the banks of the Red Sea. Pharaoh's armies are in pursuit. Moses, by the almighty power of God, stretches forth his rod and God rolls back the waters. And Israel crosses on dry ground. And when the last Israelite crossed, Moses again stretched forth his rod and God basically let go of the waters. And Pharaoh and his mighty army were drowned. The miraculous power of God brought victory to these Israelites. And there they are, on the other side of the Red Sea. They are delivered. They are emancipated. They are redeemed. They have just witnessed. They have just experienced God roll back an impassable obstacle. They have just witnessed and experienced God defeat their enemy. They have witnessed and they have experienced, if you will, God bury their past. When God let go of those waters and drowned the Egyptians, God was burying the past of Israel. He was burying that life. And this people witnessed it. They experienced it. Oh, the faithfulness, the grace, and the mercy of God. And from this point on, everything must be viewed in this light. The grace and the mercy of God. So this is now a redeemed people by a miraculous act of God on their behalf. Apart from God's dealings with them, they would have remained an unknown, enslaved people with no purpose in their life, no future, and no significance. That's where they would have forever remained. But they were singled out by the Lord to be blessed of Him. And God redeemed them. And He's given them a wonderful spiritual destiny. It's right before them. Everything is to be viewed in that light concerning this people. That's true of you and I that are saved also. Everything we do is to be viewed in that light of God saving us. So this is the setting of their murmuring. And when you see it in that light, the light of God's grace and mercy, the light of God's miraculous power in their lives, it's no wonder we read in Numbers 11 and verse 1, when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. What does that mean? It means it annoyed the Lord. It was music in the devil's ears, and still is. It's beautiful music to Satan when God's people murmur. But God is displeased. He's annoyed. He's irritated. He's angered. And the greater the mercies, the greater the sin of murmuring. It's worse for you and I to murmur that are saved than for a lost person to murmur. You have to look at it in its proper light. So let's notice what this people did. Following the miraculous crossing of the Red Sea, we come to Exodus chapter 15. And we see this people on the other side of the Red Sea. And you see what you would expect to see. You hear what you would expect to hear. There's euphoria. They are thrilled. They are excited. about what the Lord has done in their lives. And they're overflowing with thanksgiving. And they're and with passion, they lift up their voice as one to praise to the one who has saved them. It's a wonderful scene. It's a wonderful scene. They proceed on in their new life of freedom. Each step taking them further away from what they were in Egypt. That ought to be true of us. Each step ought to take us further away from what we were, from where we were. For 3 days, they look for water for themselves and their animals. And we read in Exodus 15 and 22, and found no water. They arrive at a place called Marah. And the people can see there's water there. And the excitement builds. But soon they discover that the water is undrinkable. Does that change anything that God's done for them? Not a thing. They're still redeemed. Being gloriously and miraculously delivered and being the very people of God did not exempt them from this place of Marah. Marah is the place of disappointment. It is a place of frustration. It's a place of distress. It's a place of fear. It's a place of grief. Salvation does not exempt us from those places. But notice what they did, verse 24, and the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" God in His grace, God in His mercy, in their sight, worked a miracle at Marah, and He made the waters drinkable. And in doing so, God reminded them, verse 26, "I am the Lord that healeth thee." That's the lesson. I am the Lord that healeth thee. Oh, the mercy of God. They murmured. God was displeased. But He worked a miracle on their behalf. God's merciful in all our complaints. We go out, the car don't start, we complain. God's merciful that He just doesn't take the thing away from you. We complain about the microwave. We complain about this and that. If God were to take away everything we complained about, we wouldn't have anything. God's gracious. God's merciful, and He was here to Israel. Well, notice verse 27. They come to a five-star resort of Elam. And then we read in chapter 16, verse 1, they took their journey. Now that's a very significant statement. And they took their journey. They did so by being led by the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. So those words, "they took their journey," is not an arbitrary action on their part. They did so under the guidance and leading of Almighty God. And they came to the wilderness of Sin between Elam and Sinai. Here again is a miraculously redeemed people. Here is a people who have seen and experienced the miraculous hand of God in their lives. Here is a people who have personally experienced the promise of God. Here is a people that has abundant evidence that God can. God can. They are free. Their pockets are filled with Egyptian jewelry. Life has a purpose. But notice what they do in verse 2. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron. This is a rejection of God's ordering. It is a non-submission to His plan and purpose. It is an emotional rejection of God's will. It is an emotional rejection of God's providence. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured, "This is a sin." And it is no wonder when the people murmured, it displeased the Lord. Reading in verse 3, we notice some things about the sin of murmuring. It can happen quickly. Again, they had just seen the gracious tokens of God's power. They have just experienced marvelous things at Marah. They have just experienced marvelous things at Elam. And now, they turn toward Moses and Aaron, and what are they doing? "We just want to thank God. God's been so good to us." No, they're complaining. They're murmuring. It can happen quickly. Oh, how quickly we can murmur. It is contagious. It's contagious. You can't put up with murmuring in the workplace because it'll spread. It'll spread. It'll spread in a family. It'll spread in a church. I'm telling you, murmuring will tear up a church quicker than fornication will. Because it spreads. It's contagious. Notice the whole congregation murmured. And I don't believe that it began in unison. I believe a few people murmured, and then pretty soon someone else murmured. Sit down at a table with some people and just begin to complain and see what happens. Pretty soon everyone at the table is griping. It's contagious. It really is. Murmuring and complaining breeds murmurs and complainers. It's also exaggerated. Hear this miraculously redeemed, emancipated, and abundantly blessed people say, "Would to God that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. Moses, we would have been better off dead. They didn't get my burger right. Oh, I might as well be dead." I mean, that's about how bad it is. They were saying it would have been better had we never been delivered from Egypt. Do you hear that? It would have been better had we just died there. Murmuring is often all or nothing language. Listen to the murmur. "I never get anything. You got clothes on. What do you mean you never get anything?" It's exaggerated. Everybody and everything is against me. God saved your soul. And everybody and everything is against me. Oh, how we exaggerate. Nobody likes me. Nobody talks to me. Nobody. Nobody cares. Nobody. It's always this way. Really. It's that way 24/7. Murmuring exaggerates. It's carnal. This people, they have been beaten, bruised, and oppressed in Egypt. But how did they remember Egypt? "We sat by the flesh pots and did eat bread to the full." Really? That's not what they did. Read Exodus chapter 1. We read in Numbers 11 and 5 another occasion of their murmuring. We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, and the onions, and the garlic. All things were so good then. Saved from Egyptian bondage, and they look back on those days as if they were paradise. They're like Lot's wife who looked back with wishful yearning. Looking back with rose-colored spectacles with no thought of the blessings that were right before them. No wonder God, when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. Also, we see they have a faulty perspective. Their view of Egypt is inaccurate. And there appears to be no realization of the blessings of God upon their lives. Their only concern is the immediate situation, and what God was going to do with them and through them had become a secondary and non-issue. They are focusing upon what they see as a crisis, but as you read on in the chapter, you see it really wasn't a crisis at all because God was going to provide them with manna. But they see it as a crisis. It's amazing what we see as a crisis today. No wonder when the people murmured or complained, it displeased the Lord. They have a defective faith. They had personally witnessed and experienced God's mighty and miraculous hand in the 10 plagues and God's great mercy upon them. They had personally witnessed and experienced God's passing over them in wrath on the Passover night. And they had personally witnessed and experienced the opening of the Red Sea and the utter defeat of their enemies and the burial of their past life. And they have personally witnessed and experienced God's miraculous provision at Marah and Elam. And now this very same people, and there's no indication here in Exodus 16 that the food has run out. But probably, feeling that it was going to be more difficult to obtain food and water as they go further into the wilderness, they began to feel anxiety. They began to feel fretful. And they murmur. And this is in spite of the abundant evidence of God's faithfulness in providing power. No wonder when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. Notice also it's unreasonable. Hear them say to Moses, "Ye have brought us forth into the wilderness to kill the whole assembly." Here's what they're saying. "Moses, we had a meeting. We had a murmuring session. And we have you figured out, buddy. We compared lists. And here's what we came to. You gave up all the pleasure and all the riches of Pharaoh's house just to haul us out here and watch us die. That's ridiculous. Murmuring is unreasonable. It blames someone else. Murmuring always has a target. Always. Always. Notice more importantly, it's against God. Verse 7, your murmurings against the Lord. Verse 8, your murmurings which you murmur against Him. And Moses went on to say, your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. Against the Lord. All sin is against the Lord. Murmuring is no exception. It's antagonistic toward God. No wonder when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. But notice also in the book of Exodus, chapter 16. Exodus 16, verse 7. He heareth your murmurings against the Lord. Verse 8. For that the Lord heareth your murmurings, which ye murmur against Him. Verse 9. He hath heard your murmurings. Verse 12. God says, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. God hears it. And when He does, He's displeased. This murmuring can become habitual. We see this redeemed people, this blessed people, later on murmuring again for water in Exodus 17. We see them murmuring again in Numbers chapter 11. For 40 years they murmured. And at the end of the 40 years in Numbers 14, what are they still doing? Still murmuring. And we hear the Lord say to Moses in Numbers 14 and 27, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? How long? We all know. We don't mind murmuring, but we get tired of hearing someone else murmur. It's tiring. It's exhausting. And God says, how long shall I bear with this evil generation? A blessed generation which murmur against me. He goes on to say, I've heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Habitual complainers. And God is displeased. The truth is, and it's, I believe, is illustrated in these Israelites, when there is improvement in our lives, our tolerance level for inconvenience is lowered. That's manifested here. It's true if we look at our own lives. We have it pretty good in the United States with all the modern conveniences. And our tolerance, we have all these conveniences. And our tolerance level for inconvenience is lower than ever. This microwave is now taking 35 seconds instead of 30. Tolerance for inconvenience is lower. It took me 35 seconds this morning to get hot water. My heated seats didn't work quick enough. My cold seats didn't work quick enough. Our life has been improved, but our tolerance level has been lowered for inconvenience. We see it all through society. We see it in ourselves over and over and over and over. The toaster takes too long. Things take seconds. The cell phone signal isn't what it ought to be. On and on and on it goes. You see, our life is improved, but our tolerance level for inconvenience, and may I say our definition of inconvenience, has changed. It's really changed. I mean, is it really an inconvenience that it now takes 35 seconds instead of 30? To get something out of the microwave or whatever? To us, that's an inconvenience. Fast food. Went to McDonald's and I had to wait 5 minutes. Last time I was here, it only took a minute. So now my tolerance level is lowered. I've been inconvenienced. Oh, we complain. This road is terrible. Next day they're fixing the road. Why are they fixing the road today? I've got places to go. And now I'm sitting in this traffic. Or now I've got to go out of my way. We complain when we gripe when the road was horrible. We gripe when they fix it. It's too cold. It's too hot. It's too windy. These paper plates are too thin. Don't put so much food on your plate. Who bought this pop? Who bought this pizza? Who picked this? I mean, on it goes. God hears it. God hears it. God help us. Who bought that kind of pizza? Don't you know I don't like that? On it goes. And I believe it's beautiful music to Satan. You and I, we've been saved. We've experienced something far greater than deliverance from Egypt. We've been delivered, we've been released from the bondage worse than Egyptian bondage. We've been loosed from a power stronger and more fierce and more cruel than Pharaoh. And you know what? I hate waiting in lines. You want to hear someone gripe? I don't like waiting in lines. Well, who am I? What gives me the right? That's another thing. We convince ourselves that we have the right to gripe. No, you don't. But you know what? If I have to wait in line, it doesn't change this. God save my soul. What have I to murmur about? What have I to complain about? We live in a complaining society. Though we are the most indulged society in the history of the world, we are also the most discontent. Our murmurings and our complainings are contrary to the relation in which we stand with God. By His grace and the blessings that God has so abundantly bestowed upon us. Our murmurings are contrary to what the spirit of a child of God should be. They're contrary to our profession of faith. And they really unfit us for duty. Murmuring is a blight. It really is. You work with people, you're going to hear a lot of murmuring, a lot of complaining. I did customer service for years in the furniture industry. It was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I made the mistake one day of telling a lady, "Ma'am, if that's the biggest problem you have, I'd be thankful." Shouldn't have said that. My boss told me. It's a scourge. It's a curse. It's plague. It's a menace. It really is. Again, you sit down with some people and you just start complaining. Probably no one is going to sit at that table and say, "You know what, we shouldn't really be complaining." They're going to join in too. It's contagious. We read in Lamentations 3:39, "Wherefore doth a living man complain? A man for the punishment of his sins." In other words, if you sin and God doesn't kill you, what have you got to complain about? Oh, that God would do a work in our hearts and give us victory over murmuring. Again, I speak to myself more than anyone else. Beg and plead with God. Purge me from murmuring. Beg and plead with God that God purge us from being a murmuring people. God would convict us of the terrible sin of murmuring. That He would cleanse us. That He would wash us thoroughly. Cause us to see. It's an awful, displeasing thing to the Lord. It is a sin of which we are all guilty. Perhaps, maybe not, but perhaps a sin that we commit every day in some way or another. God hears it. And when you put it in the light of what God has done for us, it displeases God. It's a terrible, terrible thing. Murmuring spirit. And yet, I know because I do it. We murmur. That waitress didn't bring my water fast enough. I drank in 8 seconds. That's why I had my other water here. Alarm bells begin to go off. I'm being mistreated. Never coming back here again. I doubt it'll hurt the business. But we feel we have a right. God has blessed us so abundantly. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we just, rather than murmured, praise the Lord. Got to wait in this line. Well, maybe God put that person behind me or in front of me to say something to them. Maybe God's preventing me from a car accident down the road. Who knows? But is it really something to murmur about? They put ketchup on my hamburger and I told them not to. I'm tired of this. And people, and no, going to McDonald's, because it happens all the time, someone complains that they're waiting too long. It won't be long. 15 seconds. Someone, oh. And now everybody in the restaurant's complaining. One guy's only been there 30 seconds. But he's complaining because the guy that's been here 5 minutes is complaining. It spreads. It's a plague. God help us that we would be a people that praise the Lord. God forgive me of all my griping, murmuring, and complaining. Brother Larry, if you come and lead us in verse song.